The Process, a podcast about creativity and experimental music. In the world of experimental music, outcomes and accolades for creators can be uncertain and at times seem far and few between. Therefore, creators and practitioners of experimental music must embrace the one thing they will always have complete control over, the process. This podcast aims to understand this creative process by listening to new works and discussing them with their creators. Each episode focuses on one creator and their music. Understanding how and why they create can inform aspiring creatives and help audiences better understand and navigate experimental music. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and I'll be your host as we explore the world of experimental music, creativity, and the human need to find purpose in their world and lives. This is The Process.
Hi, my name is Michael Drews. I'm your guest host for this episode of The Process. I'm a composer, producer, and sound artist, and I'm also a music technology professor at IUPUI University in Indianapolis. For the last several years, I've been putting out music under the artist name Hontron, and my focus has primarily been electronic music. Things I'm interested are retro synth sounds, ambient music, experimental music, and some IDM type things. So I try to combine all those things. Today we'll be listening to the track Slow Dance 84 from Doug Bielmeyer's new album, Music for Billionaires. And speaking of nostalgic synths and things like that, this is one of my favorite tracks on the album. It's steeped in nostalgia, and it's got some very interesting retro worlds that it conjures, things like old 90s Cocteau Twins, that kind of thing. Why don't we take a listen to Slow Dance 84, and then we'll talk about it a little.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doug, for inviting me to be a guest host on The Process. Let's get into this track. As I said before, this is one of my favorite tracks on the album. And the question that came to mind, you have this awesome slide guitar part towards the end, which is kind of like the climactic part of the track. And I remember back when you were doing Betty in the Sensory World, the slide guitar, was something you had just discovered and were just starting to make it be part of your sound and part of your live performance. And I remember at least some version of Slow Dance 84 kind of being part of the next step in your creative evolution. You know, you're discovering the slide guitar. Yeah. And I remember that being like the one of the first tracks that was really kind of embracing that. And I guess on the version that we're hearing on Music for Billionaires, how has the guitar factored into, like, what was that journey like? Like from going to Betty in the Sensory World to getting to Slow Dance 84, and that, like, how is the pedal, the lap steel guitar, that technique and how you're thinking about, how's that evolved?
I think it has to do with live performance. So, you know, Betty in the Sensory World was like a 60-minute drone album. And it was one of those where, you know, we were talking a little bit before about, like, you know, wanting to do more or putting a beat on something. But it kind of goes back to your old mantra that I still carry with me everywhere. Like, okay, we can do all this cool shit in our basement. Maybe you don't have the expletive in it when you say it, but we can do all this great stuff in our basement. But, you know, how do we get it out of there? How do we present it to the world? How do we perform it? How do we play it? And, you know, you kind of told me your solution, your trick, or your idea for bringing it out. And that, you mentioned, was closely linked to the guitar. And you said the guitar was a way to translate, you know, these worlds that are often abstract and are button pushing. And maybe there's, you know, we were even talking about the push, like how cool that is. But at the same time, like, sometimes that doesn't quite resonate or doesn't have the history that the guitar does.
Yeah, people look at it and they're still like, what's that guy? Is he playing something? I can't tell.
Yeah.
I mean, not kind of not at this point in time. I think people are used to seeing those things. But
like, I even think now it's more like, oh, they're pressing buttons and we're more into like DJ culture and that type of thing. But even 10 years ago, people were just a little bit of like, well, what's really going on? I don't quote unquote see an instrument on stage.
Right.
And so then that, you know,
I do now remember you started playing those live sets and the guitar, the slide guitar with the Ebo became like your axe.
Yes.
In your set, or at least that was one dimension. It was on Betty in the Sensory World, but it came after the piece. You know, it was kind of plugged into that situation, as Slow Dance 84 seems like the slide guitar is more of the climax, almost. Like you kind of go through this journey and then arrive, and that's almost like this payoff. And I think it's a great moment. And then you even kind of fill in the gaps even more, like a beat like starts forming. Right. And then you get those, it's like kind of a shoegaze Cocteau Twins guitar, which, I mean, that's the money for me. Like, I hear that and I'm just like, I'm totally in on this.
I was like, Michael needs to hear this song. Like, I need to share, like, if I'm going to have Drew's on the show here and he's going to talk about a track and have him be a guest host, I'm like, you have to save this track for him, because it's like a love letter to all the things that we dig, you know. And I didn't want it to just be sort of like a, you know, just like a synth wave, like homage, like just complete, like completely just be a synth pop track made in 2023 or 2022, you know.
It doesn't have that sound. I mean, this is a longer version than I remember. And I think the first section of it works very well to frame the later half. Like if you would have started with that, then it's not, I don't think it works as well.
You know, I think that's where Slow Dance 84 started, is that it was just this piece that I could perform live that had really no other accompaniment besides just looping, you know, like stacking and looping the guitar parts, you know, and just sort of kind of building this momentum. So like, I don't know, a year ago when I'm, you know, when I'm like working on like what songs are going to be on the album and like starting to mix stuff and process stuff, I think track 6 or whatever it is on the album, Slow Dance 84, that was just all lap steel. It was just going to be me performing that lap steel piece. And, you know, it was supposed to be on like earlier albums, because like you said, it's been around a while. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And you've listened to it a bunch of times. You've helped me like workshop it and like talk about like, well, what if you did this and that? There was a video I made for it with like Molly Ringwald and stuff, you know? So,
yeah.
But so I was like, how is this going to work in the context of the rest of the album? So then that's when like the two other elements sort of came in. And one is just the original lap steel piece that kind of evolves and has that like kind of lap steel solo at the end that you mentioned. But then there was also this kind of sound collage, you know, Schifferian kind of piece that I was trying to figure out a place to put that somewhere. And that paired nicely with it. And so I think at one version, it was the kind of really sporadic sort of electronic sounds plus the lap steel, but it still felt, I don't know, it didn't feel like a live performance. And then it didn't feel like this polished like studio album thing. So I thought for a long time, like what does this song actually need? Like what would make it bigger? And I got onto this idea of like having, so there's a local drummer named John Dalton, and he's one of these like fantastic jazz drummers that he calls himself a jazz drummer, and he does the standard rep and all that. And he's wonderful at that, but he's also the type of drummer, and I'm sure you love these type of drummers, where it's just like, you're like, hey, could you like do like, could you play this part with like a microwave or something? Like, could you have a microwave in your set that you hit on every offbeat or something like that? And they're like, absolutely. Yeah. I've got two different types. What do you want? Do you want the smaller size or the,
what kind of mallets do you want? I think a soft mallet would sound good on the GE.
Right.
I'm like, what?
Yeah. Like no questions asked. Just being okay, great. So then what mallets you want? Like you said, like what? So just super open-minded drummer. And I was like, hey, like, could you come in? And I had some like specific directions, like from this minute to this minute, I'd like you to do this and that. But mostly we just in the studio did a bunch of takes and, you know, kind of he did some more improvisatory stuff. But it was that shape of like, let's slowly build to this big sort of 80s kind of homage at the end. And even the version he was playing to was different than the final version. I think on the final version, I was like, more synths. Like, let's really sell this. Let's really do this. And I think those real drums or that live performance that you're hearing on top of it, I think for me, that kind of makes it exciting again. But the flip of that is now I'm like, if I did Slow Dance 84 live without the drums and without all the synths, like, would that still, you know, like now I'm like, now would that be lacking? Yeah.
Boy, that dynamic. You start doing a lot of these new things and start putting together, you know, music in some ways that like, it's not the normal way you do it. You end up writing yourself out of the piece like really fast.
Yeah.
Or at least come up with something that you just fall absolutely in love with, and it's got to be that.
Right.
And then when you go to play it live, like what the hell, what can I even do? I had that whole, I've made a whole bunch of tracks with these Hontron tracks. Right. And I realized I can't play any of them live, any of them, not a single one.
Yeah.
So I basically had to like really think about, well, some of these tracks I'm putting out as an album are going to be, those are those things. The live thing is something entirely different. And I would just like do it very differently. It would still in essence be that piece, but it wouldn't, it just wouldn't go down like the same way, or it might be different. Cause I could, maybe I would have like a guest with me, or maybe right. it would just be me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so.
Well, that's why I wonder if like, just because it's not the thing that we envisioned on the album, doesn't mean that the audience still wouldn't like really enjoy that or be like, wow, that is really cool. Like the kind of original structure of it is kind of cool. Or
You realize you know. That each event, each thing you're doing is its own thing. It has its own moment in time. And that's actually what people care about. You know, like it's that thing. And yeah, that took a really long time for me to get over that whole like that desire to like lock it down and get the perfect version.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a waste of time, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And one of the beauties of like what we actually do is we can do a lot of different things. We can wear a lot of different hats.
Yeah.
We can present our creative ideas in a lot of different ways. And to just really, you know, it's like kind of like the Matrix movie. Like the key is to realize there's no spoon.
There is no spoon.
You know what I mean? when you just like, I'm going to make no attempt to lock this down.
Yeah. You know, cause the flip of that is we go to shows and I've experienced this and it's even more boring than the album. Like, you
know what I mean? Yeah.
Like it's like, and that's kind of how I felt with like Betty in the Sensory World is like, well, how would you like, how are you going to play drone music for 60 minutes? And not that I have to like maintain an audience or it's going to be like a, you know, like a rock concert or something like that. But like, how is that going to even translate? And I don't know. I feel like that's my whole thing too, is that I want that experience, that live experience to be something special and be something interesting. And I think I've divorced that from like, this album is going to be this perfect thing. Like, talked about it. It's not perfect, but it's going to be this special place that doesn't exist only in my mind, only in our, you know, only in our hearts or whatever. It's a special place. And that's what we can do with recorded medium. We can, you know, we can create these special places that don't exist.
Yeah.
But I also think I'm just in awe of performers who then can take even a piece of that and somehow translate that into a performance where then you're at the show and you're like, this is the song, but it's authentic, it's interesting, and it's different. And I don't know. I think that's like, for me, that's really still the next frontier is, you know, what's an exciting way to present all this stuff live.
The album itself is really cohesive. There are like a lot, there's some of those tracks, they kind of allied with each other. You know what I mean? I could see like you cutting it even in a lot of different ways. It would probably be a pretty cool like performance from beginning to end, like the whole thing. I don't know how
my question about that is, would it involve like 80 people or would it just be one person? And
knowing what it would take to put together, it would not involve 80 people, because like
I'm just adding the union scale of like paying 80 performers, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
once.
Not going to happen. That's actually a really good way to look at it. Don't even make that a possibility because you.
I always think like that's like, could this even like, is there any way to like put this together? No. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So.
But I've been experimenting with the push and doing, I've got a live set coming up at Synthfest here in Boston in October. And that's one of the things I'm experimenting with, is taking some of these tracks and some of these songs and performing versions of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that that'll still be a performance that's interesting to the people that are attending, but it's not going to be the thing that's on the album. It'll represent it. It'll promote it. It'll feature it. But
I totally get it. That's kind of what I would like. I haven't done a lot of live performance. I really slowed down like around COVID and never really revved it like fully back up. I've done like sporadic performances since then, but nothing like steadily and regular. Actually, to be honest with you, I had a period where I wasn't sure if that's even what I wanted to do.
Absolutely.
But I do enjoy it, but mostly I'll pick something that's like a challenge, like, oh, I've never done it this way or something, and then I'll like do that. But yeah. But what I do with like my like tracks is I try to find that one thing about the track that is like a strong character identity type thing.
Yeah.
And then I build around that, you know what I mean? So there's always like, this might be a different version of this song, but it has this core recognizable thing where that makes it, it makes it uniquely that track, no matter am I playing on the push or adding guitar or singing on it or whatever, you know, but it's still like that, it has that element. And that's the thing that makes it the track, you know, that's the thing that would make it. Like I'm imagining like Slow Dance 84,
right.
It's the lap steel guitar
right.
and where you position that section, you know, right. like, so yeah. I could see like you not having the unheard ensemble, right? It's unheard or unreal. I want to say unreal for some reason.
Unreal.
yeah, that's something else, I think.
Yeah. yeah. It's an engine, I think.
Yeah, a game engine or something like that. But I could see times where like you don't have access to that, mm-hmm. or maybe you only have access to recorded layers of that. And what you have to do is like kind of process, you know, process layers of them. I don't know.
And then it's like if I have to be performing on the lap steel, then it's like if I have to be performing that, like how much other things can I be triggering, manipulating? Yeah. And at which point is it like a loss? Like, is it where it's like, well, cool, it's great that you're triggering those things, but then that's at
There's all kinds of possibilities. Yeah. My point being is like when you have that core of the lapse, it becomes no matter what is happening, it becomes Slow Dance 84, no matter how you're setting it up. You know what I mean? And probably all of these tracks, they have
that thing.
They have that kernel in them. Yeah. So you probably could build like a live set where you're doing a bunch of those and they're, and you know, and this kind of goes on forever. And the great thing about that is you do that and then, oh, wow, now that's another recording project.
It can be
these sessions and then those come out and, you know, things can just kind of, the problem that you just said, like, oh, well, you're playing the laps. Well, maybe you do, but then like you get your, basically your backup guitar player and then that becomes, you give them those files and then that means like, then that person's actually like realizing your vision of the track or something. I don't know. There's so many different possibilities for how these things can go down live, but there's no rules.
Well, Michael, thanks so much for coming on and being a great host. I feel like you also gave me like a lot of advice, which I'm going to continue to use. I feel like this was also an educational session for me as well. It helped me as always. You are like a great friend and mentor.
Yeah.
So tell us, speaking of which, all the great advice you gave me, what are all the cool things, interesting things that you're up to and what you're doing these days?
Well, I guess most recent, completed project, which was last year close to this time, was my Deranged EP, for the Hontron Deranged EP. Mm-hmm. That's my artist name. Hontron is my artist name, and the EP is called Deranged. That features kind of an eclectic blend of tracks, a lot of the nostalgic retro synth sound that I've come to really really fall in love with. A single from that EP, or at least one of them, is The Wolf Is Awake. And I shot a video for that I'm super proud of, with this amazing videographer, Joe Frank. And I've got all kinds of good retro things, some like Stranger Things, like bike riding, playing Dungeons and Dragons, of course, lots of Monster Masks and good things for that. So listeners of the podcast can check out the Hontron YouTube channel and the Hontron Spotify. Later October, Hontron always puts out music in October season. I'm going to be putting out a new single called "Like a Disease," and I'm pretty psyched about that track. And my more music coming out towards the end of the year. And after that, I'm not sure where I'm headed.
Thanks to Michael for sharing his time with me and taking a listen to Slow Dance 84 and giving me his thoughts, as well as always a bounty of sort of great mantras, great thoughts. And if you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, please check out other episodes in the series. And as always, like, subscribe, or leave a comment on your preferred podcasting app. I'm Dr. Doug Bielmeyer, and this has been The Process.